Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3. Hello, and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm Darren Moser, stranded here with my fellow Trekkies, Daniel Prue and Philip Gilfus. Gentlemen, there's new Trek this week, just like last week. Are we in a time loop?
Huzzah!
This is actually pretty cool. I wasn't told I would have co-hosts because of my condition. I didn't know that this would be allowed this week. So, I mean, but I'm really excited to talk because I have so much to say. And I've been told to not talk as much about episode 3, but I'm so excited to talk to you all about it, so I'm so glad everyone's here.
Daniel, you may not have known this because we live on opposite sides of the country, but that's my microphone. You're recording into my microphone. It's
Is that what that is? I did not know that. Yeah. Sorry,
well, today we're going to be reviewing the third episode of Star Trek Discovery. Now, we've rerouted a prison shuttle that with this week's guest, Eric Berry, also known as Trekkie B47. Eric, welcome to City Alpha 3. You're stranded here now.
Oh, thank you. I don't think I was quite prepared for this, but maybe I'll have to get some supplies from the shuttle. It'll be fine.
Yeah, if you want to take one of the fortune cookies on the dish, it's customary.
Now, this it's okay, is guys. Now Seti Alpha 4!
It's okay, I can vouch for Eric. He's not dangerous. I don't care what you say,
Philip. Well, Daniel's flaring up. Here's my question. I have two things that are bugging me the whole episode, but this was the second one. Are there fortunes in the fortune cookies?
There have to be.
I mean, because it's just a cookie, right?
There have to be. Yeah.
I mean, because like when he offered her one,
I think he totally planted something that says "Discovery."
I know. We didn't see that part where she opened it up, and it's like,
yeah,
you will discover bright new things in your future.
No, it's seriously though. Like he would totally stack the deck if that was. You know, if his family made the fortune cookies, he's got a bowl of, like, do what I want, and then a bowl of, like, go away, and depending on what he wants
you
to
know,
do,
but, like, it's also for cookie. Himself, so, like, isn't it weird to give yourself fortune, just like, you're still sexy.
You're the best captain.
So,
good job with that standing desk.
Wait, is this,
you're
like, the version of The Office, world's best captain, except in fortune cookie form?
Was his fortune cookie family... In the time when Phlox was getting his egg drop soup in Enterprise?
I think there's a tie-in. I think there's Madame Chang? I can't remember the name of the restaurant.
We got to have Sisko's restaurant that's serving Chateau Picard with,
fortune cookies.
With Lorca, the Lorca family.
Lorca fortune cookies.
So Chateau Picard goes really well with a nice,
look,
Chinese fortune cookie.
Think this through. I'm sorry.
But also, I like how, like, very streamlined. Like, I can get that you have a winery. You know, that's common. But I don't know someone who's just strictly in the fortune cookie business. Like, they didn't have a Chinese restaurant. No, they just supply the cookies. So
look, somebody's got to supply the cookies.
I guess.
And you know what's nice about it is they were all already unwrapped, which is the worst part about the fortune cookies.
Yeah, very hygienic, especially with all the dead animals and, you know.
So it's like every day he's just like pawing through the cookies. Maybe the Tribble's sitting in the bowl one day.
It's how he relaxes. And then, you know. No. And one hand stroking the Tribble, and then he goes, and you don't know where those Tribble's been, and ugh.
Well, like last week, guys, we're just kind of go through our thoughts on this episode. Some of us took notes, some of us didn't. Some of us have watched it multiple times, but we've talked amongst ourselves about Discovery, and we really want to start doing this new aspect to City Alpha 3 where we bring on a guest to help us dive into this new Trek, get different opinions. I know everyone's tired of hearing the three of us yabber on already, but I'm really excited to see what Eric has to say and everyone's thoughts are on what's kind of the first episode. If everyone kind of, the general consensus seems to be that was basically a 2-hour movie that kicked off what's going on. Now we're, was it 5-6 months later? Mm-hmm. And we're hitting, we actually saw Discovery. Surprise, surprise. It wasn't.
Ha ha, you guys. You thought it was going to be the first tractor beam that was Discovery. It was the second tractor
beam. Yeah, I totally did. Oh, you're right. That's true. That's why we introduce all new ships by a tractor beam.
Yeah. You know, the first episode was a Vulcan hello. Tractor beam is the Starfleet hello.
It doesn't quite have the same ring to it, but we'll go with it. Let's start with Discovery, and then we'll swing by a lot of new characters we got this week.
You mean the brand new...
Good luck remembering their names.
NCC 1031, you know, it's brand spanking new, because...
Okay, how does that work?
Oh, my gosh.
Can somebody explain that to me? Because I cannot wrap my... But what is it just... It's brand new, presumably, we know the Enterprise is out there in service right now, right, with a higher registry number.
And
correct.
They were constructed at the same place, San Francisco Yards, according to visuals.
True.
So why does the Discovery have a lower registration number than the Enterprise?
My guess is maybe it's something like blocks, like you have the 1700 series. That's going to be certain ships that are rolled off. And then this is... I didn't see the Glenn's registry number. That would be interesting
or
to
the
track
actual
down.
Name.
But
did you actually... Like, I know it's the... They said it. But did you actually see USS Glenn, or is it...
They didn't really zoom in too close on the ship.
The John Glenn, or is it just Glenn? Or is it the...
My guess is it's named after John Glenn.
That's my guess.
Well, my middle name is Glenn, so... Actually, they named it after me. I mean, my headcanon. Okay, your theory doesn't make any sense to me still, Darren, because, again...
The block theory? Okay.
Like, would the blocks go in reverse numerical order?
I believe it's
that
golf
make...
scores is how we do ship registry.
No, I was thinking, and this is my thought, so it's 1031, so maybe the 1000 series is, like, a certain type of ship or a certain, like, it's going to be used in a certain way, and then ships that are rolled off. So, basically, you would have a ship that comes out, it's like... different categories. So maybe this is like more of a science ship. So science ships,
Darren,
are like the 1000 block.
This is not a science ship.
Well, okay, dark black ops science or whatever you want to call it.
Dark
but...
black ops. Anyways,
it's delving into the dark ops.
I love it's fine, but it made me laugh. The guy's like, man, look at all these silver shirts. I'm like, you mean blue shirts? Like every other normal? Yeah, silver shirts, sure.
Silver shirts are not the new blue shirts, anyway. By the way.
Sorry.
They are, but that's okay.
Anyways, the ship.
I also liked how they said, what ship is this? And you later see, right above the door in that cargo bay, is a big old shield saying USS Discovery. So
there's a reason they're in prison, Darren. They don't have the highest SAT scores, I'm just saying. Now, I thought this...
Wow, the Federation's really harsh.
We'll get to that. I did see on Trek Corps, because I had this question. What class... are these ships that we see? And apparently, and this is according to Trek Corps, I don't know if this is official, but I feel like they usually don't say it unless they have a source. It's a
They're not the TMZ of Trek.
Crossfield class, named after apparently a test pilot from the 60s.
It's actually that that class name comes from the Eagle Moss model. They actually have a graphic.
That's where they discovered it. See what I did there? Just kidding. That's a terrible.
Have we seen the Discovery's plaque? Assume it has one. No, okay. I reject
Mr.
your
Saru was in the way.
I reject your explanation, Darren.
That's fine. As long as we can move on.
I just don't understand why. It seems like they're going out of their way to do some of these little nitpicky things that are just there to bother us, and it's like. It's just frustrating. Anyways, registry number aside, sorry. Sorry to get off on that tangent.
But hey,
that's all right.
Daniel, you're a nacelle guy. Tell us about the nacelles.
Oh, my goodness. This ship.
The blue nacelles.
This ship can't
be... Because the front's blue.
This ship can't be helped. It can't be helped. It's just this big, lumbering, ugly, massive blah. And I don't like it. I'm sorry. I just don't like the Discovery. I have a question about it. If you are on the saucer section, if you're on the inside of those concentric rings, mm-hmm. Can you see into the other people's rooms and like,
No, yeah, I think there are windows that are on the inside perimeter of the two.
Hi,
the
neighbor.
Two discs, so, so it's so it's not.
Hey, Bob.
It's not crew quarters, I would assume.
Well, I mean, well, I don't know what you'd want it to be like, or restrooms or anything like that.
In the trailer, they didn't have the whole double ring thing. So I wonder why that design changed.
Not the original one. Yeah. Well, I've heard people say partially it helps you kind of establish like where you are. Like if you can, it's always good to have a scene with a window or where you can kind of get a feel. And I could definitely see a scene where they're inside like the outer ring and you can see the bridge sphere and the inner ring like out the window. Like that would be cool. But I'm also wondering, you know, fast forwarding towards the end where she's Iconian jumping or whatever we want to call it.
Quantum
she's using
leaping.
The spore drive. Yeah. She stepped into the quantum leap accelerator and became Scott Bakula. But no, when she's jumping around, the close-up they show of the control panel that Lorca's controlling, I don't know if it's just an animation, but it's showing the outer ring turning. In that animation, and now we don't see that on the outside. But I'm like, what if that's part of the way the drive works? And that also leads me into the Discovery is this test bed, this ship that's very specific. It's built
or
to,
it's class.
It's basically yeah, but yeah, but the fact that the Glenn and the Discovery were co-built to be identical to have two chances to try to perfect this specific drive system. The spore drive, so I could totally see the outer ring spinning being a requirement of that drive, and thus that's in the design change. Again, I want to wait until we see it actually turning from an exterior shot of the ship, but I backed up and watched that a couple times on the pad, and it is turning the outer ring in an animation.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. What is black?
Chainsaw style, it's going to go right into the... You know, Enterprise-y, just like that.
Chainsaw style.
Like Excelsior class. Yeah, it makes me wonder what Black Alert looks like on the outside. You know, because we've seen their warp version, which is different, and that's fine. I don't have any complaints of how they show warp, both on screen and with the ship. But, you know, I think, Darren, what you just said, that, you know, because of this new testing that we learned in this episode, you know, what's the whole reason Detra of the show? What's the mission? What all these questions we had episode 1, 2. And then, so this is sort of answered. And I'm like, okay, so if that's the reason why it's, you know, designed like a 18-wheeler, I don't know, whatever. But, I mean, that's fine. You know, I mean, it's still, again, it's not aesthetically pleasing, but... I guess it doesn't have to be, but you know, I mean, I have no problem with the saucer, like the double ring.
It's not an exploration ship.
But the whole
it's a science test bed. Yeah. It is a boat. I mean, it's a boat, but you know, it when they did have some nice shots of it, like going along the side, and you see kind of like the neck, which is really stocky and big. And yeah, the bottom is just a huge space of
it's 300
habitable area.
Science labs, Darren. I don't know.
Exactly.
If you know that.
It's They're all right there. So, and then the interior, you know, is very angular and very lots of handrails and everything kind of had like a double line. And it, you know, and boy, those, I would not want to get stuck in one of those doors. When those doors shut, like they shut. You know, and like decompress that entire section or something. They were good doors, but
now I have a,
and the bridge was
stupid
nice.
Question.
Yeah.
I thought I heard it said that the Shenzhou bridge set and the Discovery bridge set are two different sets, but they look very similar to me. So I'm like, well, I don't know why they built two bridges. Cause...
We didn't really get a great glimpse of the Discovery bridge in this episode,
that's
did
true.
We only got it from the rear, right where the turbo lift comes out. We don't get like an establishing shot.
The only one that we got was that great visual effect shot of it coming through the window right into Michael Burnham.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a very classic, like, menagerie shot, like, back in the day.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, this is, it's going to sound like a criticism, but whatever. I think visually, it's going to be hard to get a bridge shot because it's so wide and big and huge. complain about what you want about the, I don't know what you call it, all older Trek, legacy Trek, I'm going to call it
It's okay, it's being shot in 16:9, so it's totally okay.
Yeah, and I guess, because I mean, so to me it's hard to get that sort of classic, hey, here's the bridge of everyone at their stations, because it's like, this big, you know, so, which, you know, whatever, difference, fine, but I'm just saying it'd be hard to get a good shot of, like, here's the bridge of the Discovery.
Well, and I want to see the engine room. I mean, we saw that main science lab.
Or an engineer.
And we saw quarters. Yeah, an engineer. Yeah, that's true. But, you know, there's no engineers, so no one goes to engineering.
No, my favorite part is, like, you're assigned to engineering. Report to the science officer. I'm like, but what's the... But then I thought about it. Because then it's like, you know, it's like biology and physics are the same man. And, like, engineering and science, it's like when you get down to it, they're the same man. You're so stupid if you don't know that. And so that's why Lieutenant Stamets
is chief
engineer.
Yeah, he came on a little hard about that. Like, he wrote some sort of manifesto about that. That was his doctorate. Science and engineering are the same man. That's the little title.
Oh, my goodness. This I went on a little bit of a rant about this not too long ago. About how there seems to be no computer science in Starfleet. And now they're not only are they completing... So she has to go to the engineering lab... No, to the science lab as an engineer to work out a computer science problem. And I'm like, you are just conflating three giant different disciplines. Nobody would... Okay, I don't care...
Look, they got four badges. You got to pick.
You know,
one of the four.
Black one, maybe? I don't know. Hey, but, you know, to anyone who says women can't code...
Medical was lucky they got their own. Lucky.
So I get it, okay? She's the smartest person in Starfleet. Ha, that's great. Even the smartest person in Starfleet doesn't know everything about every discipline. It's so infuriating, and it's like, whatever.
Look, she QA'd his code pretty well. I mean, she found that error.
Yeah, even though she didn't understand what the code was for. She was like,
doesn't make
I don't know
sense,
if this is biology or engineering. I don't know what's going on.
Look, Daniel, it's the same. It's the same. But... All right, well, let's go through some of our main characters that we've gotten, because we've got a lot of new ones. Captain Lorca, Mr. Standing Desk.
Dar.
You know, I mean, the shots they had where, like, his eyes were all kind of, like, full of stars, and there was like, a tiny line where it said, like, he had, like, some sort of war injury that he had to, like, have the light adjust slowly.
Yeah, a lightness sensitivity.
Okay, which is cool. I expected his eyes to be different than when we normally saw them, but still cool. And, you know, he's the fortune cookie magnet. You know, that's how he earned his fortune back in the...
boo, get off the stage. Here's the thing. Like, I'm thinking about, and I'm making fun of this, because they're writers and I'm not. But, like, okay, Captain Lorca, like, he's got to have a thing, like, something that makes him special or something, like an accent. Nope. No, we don't want a British. Why? An accent's not. No, we're going.
What about
America.
Silver
okay.
hair?
Something else. Okay. Like he has like a hook for an arm. No, that's stupid. Okay. Okay. How about this? He's sensitive to light. That's stupid. No, wait. Let's do that. Okay. His hook is he's sensitive to light. That's what makes him special. I'm like, really? That seems an odd characteristic.
So when they're near a star and the entire bridge is bathed with extremely bright light, he'll be like,
is it? Yeah. Is this like where they're like doing they're looking at the dailies going like,
oh,
man, this is really
okay.
Dark.
New headcanon. His ship was at the beacon and he was standing right in front of it when it turned on and it blinded him.
Oh, that's
like,
his
where's
war
my
injury?
Screens? That's his war injury. He looked right into the beacon.
Oh, classic Eclipse mistake.
Anything else on Captain Lorca? I mean, I liked him. I think he's a strong cap. You did not like Lorca.
No.
Okay, well.
No, but go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, I'm just saying I liked, you know, he's kind of a little out there. He's a little on the edge. Like, he's kind of like, I've been kind of given unilateral discretion to kind of win the war.
He has a Gorn skeleton, so there you go.
Yeah.
Was that a
Gorn
skeleton?
Yeah, in After Trek, they zoomed in right on the skull. It's a Gorn.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I was wondering. I thought it was weird. I didn't know what it was, but it's very interesting.
Because we've met the Gorn, of course. You know, it's clearly established. But
again. Why? Okay, anyways, I'm not going to get into that. That's my picking.
Because Tribbles, we clearly met.
Also, in the After Trek thing, the other like little animal, and I don't know if you guys noticed that, but it was a Cardassian vole. Yeah.
Ah, interesting. Here's my suspicion about Captain Lorca, and this is obviously based on one episode, so I may be wrong next year or 2 years from now.
Place your bets now, folks.
I think we're beginning. I think this is a prequel series for a Badmiral. I think we're going to learn what turns a Badmiral into a Badmiral. I think he's going to be a bad guy, and I think it's pretty. Obviously in the beginning of the episode they play it like, oh, he's a warmonger and he's this, you know, he's got all this freedom to do whatever he wants, and he's the ends justify the means kind of guy. And then of course he comes in and he's like, it's not a weapon, it's travel. And then at the end he's like, now I have a secret space animal monster for a pet. So I don't know. I think he's going to be a bad guy eventually, and Michael's going to kill him with a shot to the forehead. I don't know about that.
So it's like a good mutiny. It's like a
yeah.
It's exactly, yeah.
Oh, God.
She's going to come full circle. Too. Absolutely.
So she's going to draw her phaser at the last second. She'll turn it from kill to stun and bookend, you know, her tragedy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, it's Lorca. I mean, I don't want to be a negative Nelly, but I think one thing about this episode was like the crew sniping at each other and we'll get to the other characters, I know, but like, Captain Lorca must have, like, zero discipline on his ship, because no one follows his orders, apparently.
If you think of him as a pirate, it actually makes a lot more
think
sense.
Think of him as a pirate, because...
he's kind of a pirate captain.
I think the analogy of the eyes, that's a 23rd century eye patch, and the Tribbles like his parrot.
Oh, my God.
And so,
oh, my gosh. It fits so well. And he's got the strange, like... prop that he's got to keep with him, you know, be it like a sword or a bowl of fortune cookies.
Exactly, yeah. And like, you know,
Lorca's a pirate. Yeah. It makes more sense.
Also, this is a bizarre thing I had. So, you know, of course, Jason Isaacs is British, of course, but he uses an American accent. And this is the strange thing I thought. I'm like, I think it's scarier with the American accent. I think if he was...
I think
if it was British, it'd be gentler. And I'm like... have we become the bad guys now? Is that what 21st century Americans are now the bad villains and all? Oh man, that's not good for us. But
I have to say, I thought of this joke about 3 minutes too late, but I think it's funny, so I'm still going to tell
okay.
it.
Go for it.
So let's pretend like we were talking about that Gorn skeleton again, okay? And
that Gorn skeleton. I didn't realize that's what that was. Yeah.
Oh, that's a Gorn skeleton. See, I thought that was a house elf.
Oh,
oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Only
thanks.
Editing could save us from that joke.
I really wanted to get that one out.
But yeah, because they repeat. I mean, the warmonger is from Stamets, so I don't necessarily. But like, yeah, we gotta win the war. We gotta win the war. I'm like, I imagine like with Patton and the helmet and like the little walking stick, you know, like walking back and forth across like the Federation.
So if he
flag.
Stands in front of a giant Federation, Federation of Planets flag, and starts to give a speech, we'll know it's a little.
Because I think the thing with Captain Lorca, out of the whole Discovery crew, he's like, yeah, I like him the best, and that's sad. So, but we'll get into that.
All right,
except
moving
for
forward.
We'll
any
put Saber,
other notes
you know, aside for
on
a second.
Oh, that's true. But what about Michael Berman, though? I mean...
I met her before.
The Mutineer?
Episodes 1 and 2.
Is that who you're talking about? Mutineer?
Well, yes. Yes, I do. But I'm just
I've been in prison for killing an Andorian for, like, years. But even I've heard of her. So, I mean...
No. He's killed multiple Andorians because he says all of them were...
Yeah, I do love... I mean, because I can get the Starfleet would know it, but the prisoners in, you know, prison... Penal Colony 502. Yeah, we've heard of it too.
Well, I imagine somebody who starts a war would probably be pretty significant.
See,
even in...
I feel that's very unfair to her. I don't think she's...
Oh, I think it is. Yeah, I agree.
No, she's the scapegoat. She's the Federation can't be the ones that started the war. It has to be an individual. The first... And then
Klingons
someone said the first
started the war,
mutineer in Starfleet. Like,
well, to be fair, she
kind
did
of drawing
kill
a line
someone
in the stand.
In self-defense.
Well, she still killed someone first.
Right.
I'm just saying it's not so black and white.
You're talking like a Klingon, Philip. Like, of course, it's self-defense. But.
Also, and I know in a podcast full of white men, this is going to be dangerous territory. I like the natural hair on her now. It was straightened in episodes 1 and 2. And judging from the look forward, she's keeping her natural hair. And so, which I like. I think, you know, I don't think you should. Well, I mean, that's just, again, white boy saying that. I don't think you should have to straighten it out to be on Star Trek. And so, of course, you know, the actress has very natural hair if you've seen her in real life. And so I like that look for Michael Barnum. I know it's very superficial to talk about.
I think it kind of informs her character, though, like what happened on the shuttle, because she was just ready to die with that pilot going off.
Yeah.
So I think she's beyond caring about the hair or anything, really. Mm. At this point.
So, all right, let's talk fan predictions about the shuttle pilot.
Okay. I hope they saved her. Like, it was the discovery was right there.
Because, again, Captain Lorca, remember, everything was orchestrated by him. Apparently,
we all agree that he got her on the shuttle and got the shuttle to head towards him.
Go further than that.
That's completely obvious.
But why were they on the shuttle? There was some sort of accident on, like, a penal colony and, like, all the people died or something.
Oh,
that was Captain Lorca. And so,
man,
he transferred her.
He's Captain
to the
Harlack.
Shuttle.
He's basically a pilot.
Yeah.
He's a space pilot.
And then he let the pilot die because he had to make it look good. And then he tractor beam. And so I'm telling you guys, this guy has so much blood in his hands.
So you're subscribing to Badmiral theory as well, Philip. I like it. All right.
But anyway, yeah, that was the thing that was bugging me. Number one was, did he save the pilot? We're not going to talk about that.
Okay, 45-minute episode. We got no time.
The tractor beam would be wide enough for it just to grab her alongside the shuttle at that point.
The shuttle did fly away, so presumably someone from the Discovery crew didn't just volunteer to be prison pilot, you know, shuttle pilot. But
that's true.
Of course,
they just put on autopilot and just let it go.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't get names,
It'll be fine.
If you fly the shuttle, you're just pilot, as I learned when I did the away team, so... You know, that's sort of the red shirt of this. So it's like, you know.
That's true. The copper shirt?
Yeah.
Well, I also was thinking, you know, with Michael, I liked her interaction with all the other characters. Again, we're seeing almost a new character because of what's happened and the time that's passed. Like, her interaction with Saru, you know, she's really being genuine and she's like, and it's very real. It's like, yeah, I really screwed up.
And the sick burn that he gave her.
Oh yeah, that was good.
Ooh, I was like, you're harsh.
That's the best line of the whole
episode. Her threat ganglia are coming out now.
It makes sense.
No, I love Saru and everything he's in.
Yeah, he's a constant highlight.
Yeah, because I think, you know, obviously with her being, you know, once the first officer, now being, you know, below cadet apparently, which also
he's like,
also
Commander Saru every time, Commander
First Officer, yeah,
Mr.
First Officer,
Commander,
yeah.
Saru.
Well, and
first
I also
officer.
Love that apparently they don't teach in Starfleet Academy that when someone shows up in a gold jumpsuit, that means they're a prisoner, and not just a new roommate for a random reason. But anyway, so but yeah, no, I did like her. Yeah, you know, I like that scene with her and Lorca where she's like, "I know why you have me here. You're doing this illegal stuff," and he's like, "No, I know who you are. I know exactly who you are, Michael." I think he's from Texas. I don't know what he's doing, but anyway. And so, but I think she's defining herself and what people
the
expect.
Great fortune cookie empire. Of Texas.
You know, I've seen that musical, The Best Little Fortune Cookie in Texas.
No, isn't fortune cookies originated in San Francisco? I believe another San Francisco reference
maybe.
In Star Trek.
There you go.
I'm fairly certain that's where they came from.
I think
so.
Yeah,
I was born there. No, I'm just but yeah, so, but any other thoughts on Michael before we move down the? Down
I mean,
the
I love that.
Line?
I mean, I think she's a great character. You know, obviously, she's the main character, quote unquote, and not and
pirate captain,
yes.
Evil pirate captain.
Well, he's the
I don't know.
He's the dread pirate Lorca.
It's oh, dread pirate Lorca.
Oh man, it's going to be interesting how. Like, I get that it's going to be a big redemption story, obviously, but the way that they treat it right now, it almost seems irredeemable. It almost seems like there's no way these people are going to be okay
right.
with
like
her
is
eventually.
She ever actually going to be in a uniform again? Like,
well, apparently,
how would that
the
fly?
The preview for next episode, she would seem to be in a silver, like no rank, I don't think, but just in a.
Oh, she's got Wesley's hand-me-downs or hand-me-ups.
Yes,
from 200 years ago.
Time
travel.
Good try, Daniel. Good try.
Well, this is not necessarily Michael herself. But how did you all think, and you know, for precedent, I think about Ensign Ro in the episode called Ensign Ro, and then Caretaker with Lieutenant, I guess it was just Tom Paris at that point, of how everyone hates Michael.
They really hate Michael. Like, like 10 times as much.
Yeah, so like in Ensign Row, like Riker really, you know, is like, she doesn't belong here, blah, blah. In Caretaker, we have sort of the douchebag first officer and doctor who are like, don't, you know, Harry, don't hang around. But we don't get the whole bloomin' crew being like, yeah, those guys are terrible. But in this episode, everyone hates Michael. And it kind of turned me off a little bit. Like, I get it that she did a bad thing, but, like, everyone's, like, spitting at her as she walks by. You
but
know?
I think that just means that Starfleet is really pinning this on her. Like, she really mm-hmm. is the true scapegoat. Yeah.
She's their fall person.
So everyone's like, yeah. Well, she's the start of it all. My cousin died. Well,
the Shadow Admiral Council, you know, thus decreed it. Yeah. So she's now the fall guy.
Yeah. And I guess I understand that, Eric and Darren. I mean, like, I understand that that's what they're saying, but that's not what they've shown me, because I know she didn't start it. And so I'm like, well, now all the other characters look like terrible people. So
I was taken aback by how harsh they were. Like, even if they don't like her, they seem to cross a bit of a line that hadn't been crossed before. Especially
people.
For
it's
especially
war,
for people,
Daniel.
Like, you know,
this is war.
Yeah, well, that guy is in the room with the captain and is saying these kind of terrible, degrading things. And it's like, okay, I don't know. It wasn't a huge deal, but I was like, yeah, this is a little much. I get the point. Nobody likes her. But again, you can be a little more subtle with it, I think. Because
I think the only person who, you know, because I think it's a little much. And I think the Saru stuff, like, that is cutting, but that, you know, that's right. Earned from a writing standpoint and from a story standpoint. You know, however he thinks, whether you agree with it or not, you can see why he has his thoughts about her. And I think it's good television, the way his point of view and the way he talks to her. So, poor Mickey. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was just thinking the whole time.
I like how she shut that down instantly. Like, no, you're not going to do that.
She's like, no. Okay, well, that transitions pretty well straight to Cadet Tilly, who's a fourth-year cadet and is probably one of the most unique and interesting characters of Star Trek we've seen in a long time.
Hey, first of all, we get new insignia here, which we haven't seen before, which is cool.
Right. And it has four really thin gold bar.
Which I would assume is like she's a fourth year. Yeah.
That's my guess, yeah.
So fourth year, I think, is the Triwizard Tournament. No. But
did you put your name in that cup and end up on the Discovery, Tilly?
Did you put Mickey in that?
It's a binding magical contract to Captain Lorca. He is gonna put you in a room.
Oh man,
and you're gonna
I thought it was
gonna
be you know, Hal Silver this year, but looks like.
Anyways, and I don't care what. I know Philip's gonna come in here and rain on this, but she was the best character by far. My favorite character of the show, of the three episodes that we've had so far. It's played a little heavy-handedly, a little, but I think. I think the actress is very endearing, and she plays it very genuinely, and that was enough mm-hmm. for me. That was enough for me to be like, okay. And I said this in the chat, that line where she says, I'm going to be a captain. I want that to pay off the last season of Discovery, whatever that is. I want her to, like, step up.
Or like where Harry becomes like the captain of the Nightingale for like an episode.
Yeah, sure.
Like something happens where she.
Well, how about more like he was. I mean, not that I'm saying your feelings about Endgame aside, when he was captain there, that might be the better example.
That's true. Yeah.
So she's awesome.
No. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree, Daniel. I think that kind of payoff would be nice. And we're just seeing her start. Like, she at the very beginning, she's not even an ensign yet. She's not even an acting ensign yet.
My big question is, what is so special about her? Because it seems like Lorca really handpicked everyone for the Discovery.
Best of the best.
Why would he pick a first or like a last year cadet for?
It was a throwaway line because I didn't get it till the second viewing. It's when she's in the shuttle and she's babbling to Michael. She says she's the best theoretical engineer in Starfleet, and apparently she got skipped or jumped a year or something. She said something. I've now forgotten it, but I think she jumped a year or something like that. So she's
there's also
Wunderkind, you know, as usual.
There's that plus the line where she says that she went and for a summer and interned at the cookie factory.
Oh,
so,
your family knows his family. And...
No, you know, it's they don't have a sorting hat when you get on Discovery. It's just you open the cookie, and only one in four will get the you've been assigned to the Discovery. The rest have
it tells
go back
you what
to
Yeah, he's just like, oh, science. You're gonna be science, but I'm an engineer. Nope, you're gonna be science.
It's the same thing. So.
You are no longer named. You are pilot. it's become Farscape. That's what it's.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
10 points to engineering.
Oh man, I want to see that now. Now you'll notice it in his ready room. That'll have like the three colors, and there's lines next to him.
And if he feels a certain division's not doing so well, kind of like push it backwards a little bit.
And I can
like,
see a little bit of sort of Harry and Snape with Lorca and Stamets. So, you know, it's always like, I'll try to impress us, Lieutenant Stamets, you know.
I think Saru is more Snape-ish. Yeah.
Was that a Fantastic Beast that he caught in?
There we go. Well, with Cadet Tilly, I mean, and I think, you know, judging from a lot of online reaction, people do like her, so I'm not here to rain on any parades or anything. I would just say this, you know, watching this whole episode, and I know I'm going to sound like the old, Trek, back in the day, whatever. But I mean, the one thing that struck me about episode, like, one and two, I was very engaged, and episode three really took me back a little bit because I didn't see the utopia, the optimistic, the we've come so far in the future. I just saw, like, people biting each other's heads off, people hating each other, people with all these flaws. And I mean, I get that's modern storytelling, but I'm like, where is that we're good in the future? You know, it just seems like, you know, is it Battlestar Galactica again? And I mean, that's perhaps taking it too far. But that was just, and maybe I'm not trying to overreact, but that's sort of where I came to with episode three. And so with Cadet Tilly, I'm like, oh, Barkley again? I mean, like, how'd she... But I get that it resonates with people who are like, hey, I'm like that too. But I'm like, well, in the future, you probably won't be, you know, but I don't know. I just have a problem with you making it too modern, but that's just my approach to Star Trek. I know it's not everyone's, and I prefer to see aspirational depictions, not like who we are now. And so it's like, I'm allergic and can't eat gluten. And I'm like, okay, but really?
Hang on. Well, hang on. We had an episode where we kind of debated what Starfleet was. Military versus exploration, and the show itself doesn't really, I mean, it explores aspects of it, but we have a debate here between two major characters about that very issue, and it's seeming to be, will seemingly be...
We're at war. We gotta win the war.
Yes, a significant debate. This could be a theme of the whole show, which would be amazing, because I would love to get more than, you know, it's a peacekeeping armada or whatever, you know, more than that, kind of delve into exactly what all these people think Starfleet is and exactly what its intentions are. So this is at least that to me, that conversation, or not the conversation, but I guess it's more of a monologue that he has on the shuttle. That was so Star Trek to me. And that brought me like right back into it. I was right on board with that. And I'm like, yes, I love the idea that the captain here is representing this more militant kind of side of it. And then you have this engineer who...
He's a science officer?
Science officer, sorry. I don't remember his name. I'm really bad at this stuff. It takes me a while.
Paul Stamets.
You can say the guy from Rent, if it helps you.
The guy from Rent. And I really liked that already, that we're already having that. And of course, they're both going to... And that opens up a whole possibility for a whole host of things to see here. And I thought that was fantastic. So.
And then also with the cadet, last thing I'll say, just because she's a redhead, I tend to focus a little harder when I see a redhead depiction, you know, especially a young lady. But anyway, I'm like, are they giving her pimples on purpose? Because I feel like it's a little far. I feel like that's a little far. Like, we already got, you know, everything else. You got to give her a skin condition. Come on, people. You know.
Philip, in the 23rd century,
just give
you
her a space
care.
Inhaler and just call it a day.
You wouldn't
care. Everyone snores. That's the...
and drools.
That's right.
Now, I don't remember... the name of this character specifically, but it was the one that Michael saw in the mess that I think she recognized from
USS Shenzhou. It is Kayla Detmer. She saw it was Kayla.
And she had the little kind of like Seven of Nine-ish eye, like that she obviously was injured in that fight, and so that's going to be awkward when that eventually...
And it looks like she's the... in at least in the next episode, she's the con officer, the pilot for the ship. So
right,
Maybe Lorca picked the best person who piloted, you know, during the battle, the binary stars.
You didn't run into that asteroid, yeah. So good job. Welcome to
the
Discovery.
He did a lot of Shinzu picking. Yeah. You know, he got Saru, he got, what's her name? Detmer, Michael, of course. So, I mean, yeah, that was a...
Took him a while to get this complete set. He's maybe swooping up all the ones that are
He's
still
been on
around.
Space eBay and...
Just waiting.
See this one, it's not gonna be shipped for a while, but it's been in prison. I think I can get it.
Yeah. He had to trade that one for 50 dead miners or whatever.
Oh. Well, did we have any other thoughts on Science Officer Paul Stamets?
Yeah.
And
oh, we didn't even start with Paul Stamets, my friend.
He has such a big chip on his shoulder, and I don't think it's just because of Lorca. I want to know more about his background of why he's such a prick.
Yeah.
But yeah, because he also, from some of the lines, the way when he was talking about to Michael about the research he was doing, the way he was talking, it almost sounds like he was a civilian and got snatched by Starfleet.
That was not, I'm very surprised that's not where we went immediately. This is like, forced conscription by Starfleet. That sounds exactly like what it is. And
then he was working with his partner, and they got split up to double do the work. You know, in two separate ships. And
he said they took us. And I'm like, okay. Well, I mean, I agree with you. He is kind of a jerk, but that would justify his like if he was working on this thing for his whole life, and he was working on it for purely. Scientific reasons, and then all of a sudden he's being brought into this organization that he wasn't a part of, at least in that way, and he's being forced to do these things. Yeah, I think that would be a fairly good reason to have issues with being there.
And he was very it reminds me of like Carol Marcus from Wrath of Khan. Very much like, hey, you're taking my science project, I've worked on this for a long time, I really hate Starfleet, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But she was, exactly well, but of course, play. I mean, that was more David than her. I mean, she was like that, but she wasn't like clawing at everyone she saw. And I feel like, because I love Anthony Rapp, and I love talking to him on Twitter. So I'm like, oh, I really hope they make Stamets better, because he's not a likable character at all. And I guess that's the whole criticism of Legacy Trek, because, there's no conflicts among them, which, of course, there was. But, like, that's they're really making up for it in Discovery, because everyone hates each other. But I get, like you said,
nobody
Daniel,
wants to be there.
If that's the background, that he was conscripted, which, again, not very Starfleet.
Well, Bones was, right?
Yeah.
They drafted me.
So, it happens.
That's true.
Little things of like, we don't like lurkers. I'm like, don't make up words. Don't.
Hey, but here's the thing. Oh, lurkers. That's funny. Actually, here's the thing. We now understand why it's significant for the Discovery to have one of its major characters be played as a whatever he was, whatever type of scientist he was, some sort of microbiologist, essentially.
Fungus.
Astromycologist.
Yeah, so this makes sense. Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah, which I remember seeing that in the leads. We're like, okay, that seems really specific.
Executive officer in charge of radishes.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's what I thought of. So, okay, well, speaking of the Spore Drive, since it's the internet and everyone talks about their thoughts, I've heard a couple theories on that, which we can toss around and debate as if we thought of it. One is, this might be... There's the big elephant in the room of, since this is a prequel, obviously we know Spore Drive technology doesn't work. But I'd like to think of either that it could evolve into something that we just don't recognize. It could eventually vanish without a trace. I've heard people say it's the beginning of transwarp type technology, because we don't really know a lot about transwarp. All we know is that it doesn't work.
Much like this people, will not work, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've also heard some people say this could be leading towards the Omega molecule, which I thought was a really interesting thought.
Oh.
I it's a bit of a leap, but I
a quantum
an
leap.
Interesting thought.
Ah.
Yeah. But, you know, there's also a bit of an Iconian kind of feel, like, from the Iconian gateway. Like, they could maybe be using this same technology. It's just way more polished because they perfected it.
So, when I watched it, my first reaction was, okay, they're ripping holes through space-time, and they're pulling through this weird, scary monster that can't be killed or whatever.
The Resident Evil monster.
It does look a lot like the Resident Evil monster.
Resident Evil's my first thought, but then on the chat, there was a Stranger Things reference. I'm like, well, yeah, that is the...
Well, it also could... Yeah, it could be the same sort of thing.
Oh, it's the Demogorgon.
Yeah. That they're pulling it through. And, of course, if it's starting to rip holes in space-time, you're going to not want to use it. That was just where my
Daniel,
thought
we've got to win the war.
Yeah, that's where my head went. I'm not sure what you guys.
My head went to I thought about the Excelsior from the movies and that it was a failed transwarp drive, and that's where my mind was kind of going with this whole, you know, transwarp, but set in the original series era, so it might be that kind of a thing. But you know, there's been talk of a Mirror Universe episode coming up. And I wonder if this is also some kind of gateway into the Mirror Universe, and that's why they don't use it in the future.
Because we knew about the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like they are necessarily going to, like, classify it and say, oh, this is going to be now henceforth called the Mirror Universe, and if anyone ever travels here again...
Well, you know, it's probably going to be classified above Top Secret, because I know it flashed Top Secret on the view screen, but the audio said above Top Secret. They don't even have a name for it, guys. It's above Top Secret.
See, if it had not been already established that the Mirror Universe exists at this point, then I would be, I think I'd be a little okay with the idea that...
Well, it obviously it exists, it's just we haven't been...
Well, the Enterprise...
Well, no, what I'm saying is if this drive created the Mirror Universe, I would be okay with that idea. Consider, if obviously we didn't already establish that the Mirror Universe exists at this point.
Oh, you're saying
obviously
sort of
we,
like
oh,
dimensional
because of
universe.
Enterprise.
Right, yeah. If it started splintering the universe, then that would be a pretty good reason to put that research down, that technology down. Obviously that's not the case, so I'm not really sure how, even if it does have something to do with interacting with the Mirror Universe, how that would play out. But hey, you know what? We're being told to trust in the writers here.
No, in the
maybe Lorca's from the Mirror Universe and he just wants to get back.
Well, in the Mirror Universe, is Lorca good then? Is that...
He has a beard and he's very good.
He's
know.
Very nice. And he has
white hair and he's very nice.
He has jelly beans in a bowl instead.
Jelly beans.
Is that the opposite of
his great jelly bean fortune empire? Yeah.
What is the opposite of a fortune cookie? I'm not sure.
Now, I mean, it is kind of an out there technology. This kind of, okay, there's this set, this microbe, atomic, quantum level spore that's kind of biological, that's kind of physics, that's everywhere, and we're just basically, it's like the new subspace is basically how I kind of perceived it. Like subspace is everywhere, and that's how we're we're flying. And then, so I like the fact that it was like, okay, I can't quite understand how this works, but I'm okay with that because it's pushing a technology kind of into the fantastical, which is nice for Star Trek to do, I think, once in a while.
Is it? I mean, is it when it's, and we come back to this,
Trap
and,
of the prequel.
And I don't want to harp on it every time, but it's hard not to when we keep getting these things that almost seem intentionally anachronistic. Like, why are you going to follow this? I'm not the first person to put this forth, and I don't even know if I really agree with it, but there have been plenty of people who have said that you could have easily set these three episodes after post-Voyager with,
like 100 years past Voyager,
with hardly any alterations, and it would work just fine as a story. There's so far that we're not being served as it being a prequel, and I think we're doing a disservice. Again, we're three episodes in. Something could happen in episode 4, episode 5, or episode 6 that ties it all together.
It's
going to
be the Harry
awesome
Mudd episode
great.
That grabs you, Daniel.
It may be. I'm not even saying, like, on the quality of the show. I'm just saying on the why are we placing it in this point in the timeline. That's all I'm saying. It just seems to frustrate and irritate people at this point. I hope it pays off. Right. But it's hard to see it from the point.
It just
that
seems
right
like
now.
A prequel, just so they can say, "Hey, here's Michael Burnham's sister that you never knew about," and or "Here's Spock's sister that you never knew about," and it's 10 years before Kirk and Spock. Woo! Like, that's why I liked Enterprise, but I dislike the notion that this is a prequel just because of some of the visual elements that seem so much more farther in the future that we never saw in the original series.
Yeah, a good thing and a bad thing. So a good thing, you know, if you're going to have the Michael establishment, we got the name Amanda Check and her son, so Spock, and we got the Alice in Wonderland. And that was, you know, that was cute. That was fine. That's, you know, they're trying, and with news about that we're going to see Amanda. You know, there you go. We've seen Sarek. Why not see Amanda? On the bad side, and I don't know, because I feel like it's both good and bad when you have Star Trek fans writing Star Trek. Because, A, we, you know, as fans, we want Star Trek fans writing Star Trek. The danger is they're going to be like, hey, you were watching Star Trek in this scene. Hey, you're watching Star Trek in this scene. And so we got the Tribble, and you're like, yeah, we don't need that. That's a little much, guys. You know, so, you know, I think sometimes I feel like they get to pull back. Like, it's like not every episode of, like, Voyager or Deep Space Nine was like, remember that Kirk mission? It's like, no, you don't. Just do your thing. And, you know, it's, don't worry about being fan service-y. You know, you be comfortable. I mean, I guess I know we're new. Maybe they're still trying to, like, make everyone comfortable. But I'm like, you know, just do your own thing. We'll go there. It's fine. You don't have to call back every scene.
Yeah, and I agree. I can see what you're saying, though, Daniel. Like, yeah, except for a couple of tiny stylistic, like, you know, the phaser looks like a, you know, Pike phaser. Besides stuff like that, this could totally be 100 years post-Voyager and
yeah,
without batting an eye. Like, it's not like Vulcans are going to be gone at that point. It's not like, I mean, yeah, you have, like, Sarek and some other name drops. But, you know, but again, I'm still on the ride, you know. I see what you're saying, but it's not enough to make me, you know, unsubscribe, at least at this point.
Which kind of irritates me when they originally said, I guess, Brian Fuller's original vision that this would be an anthology show in Star Trek. Yeah. And that's something I've always wanted. And because then you can get the actors from the past shows and have them age appropriate. Like, you could have this set, you know, 30 years after Voyager, and it'd look right because it's 30 years after TNG kind of a thing. So that's what frustrates me about the show, is that they had a chance to do this anthology thing, and who knows, they may be able to do that in the future if this is a success. But it just feels like the prequel thing is just a prequel so they can name drop all that stuff. And as a fan, I kind of love it because I'm like, yay, Andorians. And look, that's the, you know, mining colony that she transported into from the Horta episode. So, yeah. I'm conflicted.
It's like, it's the, well, I don't know. I speak for myself. This isn't universal. It's like fourth season Enterprise. You're like, yeah, it's the, do we have to, though?
But the thing with Enterprise was it was filling so much of a bigger gap.
Right.
Like, that was hundreds and hundreds of years of stories that were, you know, that you could mine there. Right here, we're just like, we're just so close. Right. We're just like, yeah, right,
it's
there.
Like, it's been like 20 years right before. Like, don't make the Enterprise, like, out there. I think it's like right before the Enterprise gets commissioned, you know, then do a story.
That's the season finale. We're building a new ship called the Enterprise. There we go.
Sure, you could meet like Lieutenant April or something. Sure. You know, then it would be just, you know, it's the fact that this is almost, and probably, well, not, but by the end, it'll be very close to contemporary with what we understand. It's very difficult to reconcile those things.
Three sort of had me pause because I was wanted to. I'm like, well, this is new. This is not, you know, what we're used to.
I had a bit of pausing as well.
But episode three was like, I guess, and I don't want to repeat myself, but it's just the darker elements. I mean, there's still a little bit of humor that was in this episode. And I mean, a lot of the Michael stuff, like I said, I'm enjoying Michael. And I'm enjoying, Saru's not my favorite. I know a lot of people like Saru. He's not my favorite, but I enjoy it and I understand where he's coming from. All the other characters were kind of hard to take. And that's just me. That's just me. For various reasons. And then just the darker, not everyone's just like, any aspirational characters who I would really look up to at this point. And so that's just where I am now. It's only episode three, right? This would have been like the naked time or whatever in any other series. So, you know, I'm obviously still here for the whole season and everything, but I'm just like, okay, I hope we...
But yeah, I think overall, I think it served its purpose. It had established... I liked how it established enough of Discovery's mission. I mean, my big fear was that we're going to get... I mean, yeah, we have more questions still, but I was afraid that we were going to get 10 more questions and only answer two. Like, that's how television seems to, if we're going to keep things a mystery, we can't actually have our audience know what's going on at all. It's like, no, I liked how, yeah, there's still a bit of a mystery, but we know what the drive is. We know how it works. We know the motivation of the captain, at least what he's presenting. And we know kind of the main players, and there's the overarching, we're at war, and this is why we're doing what we're doing. So I was very satisfied with a lot of that. And now I think we're only going to just peel back more and more in and get deeper and deeper. I was very worried that it was going to be, well, we're not going to tell you what the mission is of Discovery until episode like 8. And I'm like, why keep that, you know, why keep that a secret so long?
I hope we introduce new characters at a much quicker pace going forward. It feels like we are only getting slivers of people at a time, and Star Trek has always been an ensemble. So I want this to be a bigger ensemble. I want this to be, you know, more characters. So some people have mentioned that, yeah, we're kind of seeing this from a Lower Decks kind of feel because we only get Michael's perspective, and that's fine. But I want to know a bunch of these people on the ship. I want a bunch of them to come and go. That's part of the wonder of Star Trek to me, is like this. The whole crew is part of this same thing, and that's what I want to see again. So it feels really limited the first two episodes, obviously, because of the story they were telling. But here, even here, we're only introduced really to 2.5 new characters.
It felt very short.
So yeah. I want this world to grow much faster than it seems to be.
And just two quick things. One, I think...
Philip...
Is he shushing me?
the shushing Klingon.
Yes, which is actually
promptly died.
A book that my mom read to me when I was growing up. It's just like the Laughing Vulcan. For the security chief, I don't know her name from Battlestar Galactica.
But the character Landry, that's her name? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's terrible too. He calls prisoners garbage, calls them animals, and then tells Vulcans they need to stick to logic and not fighting. And so I'm like, so you're terrible too.
Hope they fight each other to death on her, you know, on her ship in the mess hall. Yeah.
Although we're given to think her one scene that she has at the end with Lorca,
they're together.
That she's there's
the first time I thought it was a little awkward. Second time I'm like, maybe I'm just imagining it, but it was a little. Talking too close together and like, see you later, wink, lieutenant.
Anything, anytime.
That's what she says, yeah. And I didn't know if it was like a romantic sexual
or
tension
conspiracy.
Thing. Or is she like, I give you my, you know, word, I will follow you to the
Daniel,
ends of the universe.
Daniel, context is for kings. You're not a king. I can't explain
Great
this for
the
you.
Captain's enforcer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that end, I mean... Yeah, sometimes we don't want them to drop the title into the
second
episode,
time.
But but that worked. I
we
mean,
had Vulcan hello.
Really,
I don't know if they said, "Hey, we're at the Battle of the Binary Stars."
They referred to it as that.
The Battle of the Binary Stars.
That's like what it's being called now.
Well guys, I really am looking forward to the next episode when one of the characters casually drops that the butcher's knife cares not for the lamb's cry.
That's actually a super awesome TOS style title, right?
It
there.
Is.
Yeah, I mean, if
it's like
Deuce,
practically a paragraph.
Exactly. That's a great title. Yeah. I'm very excited.
Thou butcher's knife careth not for the Lammeth's cry.
Lammeth? I don't think that's how that works, but that's okay.
That's totally how you change it into Italian, right? No, just kidding.
Oh, real quick.
Latin.
Since we didn't talk about it, the scene. So, first of all.
Any final thoughts?
Yeah, okay. Oh, okay. Okay, I'll just say it anyways.
Sorry, go for it. Yeah, no, you're
this,
good.
So they blew their sister ship already, you know? So we get that in a bunch of other Star Trek. Obviously, it happens in TOS and TNG, Deep Space Nine. Obviously, we don't get it in Voyager. And Enterprise. So it happens in everything
no,
with Voyager.
Voyager
blew
up the
Oblivion.
Equinox or fought the Equinox.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
Yeah,
as
but there was though. There was the duplicate of Voyager that was made from the living metal.
Oh yes, that's right. Yes, you're right. So
Countdown to Oblivion.
So I guess technically you do get it in all the series. it happens right here in the third episode, and the sequence where they go on board the other ship. Two things I have to say about it real quick. The lighting and that action scene when they're running from the that creature was garbage.
Resident Evil Monster.
Was total, like, I couldn't even watch it. Had no idea what was happening. Just garbage. Like, they should have better flashlights or something. There's no reason that I should have no idea what's going on.
Did you notice?
On the
I did. That the second viewing. That the flashlight is got like three. The phaser. Yeah, has the three.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
That's what Star Trek does. Like, you either have the palm beacon, the one. On, Voyager had the two. Yeah. Had the two on the wrist.
Flashlight on
and
stun.
And then Discovery's got three. Yeah. Or kill.
Stunningly bright.
That's how you take out Lorca.
That was my bad part about the Glen. And then my good part about the Glen was something, and I can't remember. Although I was excited to see the Jeffrey's tubes, obviously.
Yeah.
A good call out there.
The totally jacked up bodies on the Glen.
That's what it was. That's exactly what it was. Thank you. Yeah. It was actually, Star Trek has done body horror before.
Too much.
This was very effective. Body horror, and it was I do agree it probably crossed a little bit of a line here that we haven't seen before, and it was genuinely disturbing. The
TVMA.
Closest thing I could think of was from the motion picture with the
kind of reminded me of what Saval said in Enterprise before they entered the Delphic Expanse, where he said that there was a crew that came back and their bodies were flayed open and they were still alive, and that's what they didn't show it, but this feels like what they were showing. It was
yeah.
Nuts.
They didn't show that
because my assumption is not that something attacked them; it's that they all died because they were in spore drive mode and it like dropped out, and
right.
That totally jacked up their bodies.
It's like that one episode of Voyager, right? Is it Twisted or? Yeah, it's basically that's what happened to them, and they were just kind of like,
talking about the visual.
Yeah, it was very effective. I will say that.
And they're just goo piles on the floor. It's it was much.
On the other hand, I don't mind Star Trek being a little scarier or a little creepier than it's been before. I think that's kind of a cool. Maybe that's a way to differentiate it here.
Look,
Haunting
of Deck 12 can't be enough for you, Daniel, then I don't know what is.
Well, you know, in interviews,
let old Neelix light this light and tell you a story. It'll chill your bones.
In interviews, they talked about this can be a mature rated show now because it's not on syndication, it's not on TV, it's a web show, and they specifically said, look, they're not going to be dropping F-bombs, there's not going to be sex in the show, you know, like, but it can be a more mature kind of a thing. And if this is what they mean by it, if they're going to actually show us this kind of stuff, I think you can definitely go overboard with it. But I actually think it makes it more effective because it makes space seem scary, way more intimidating than, obviously, we would have never seen this on most of the other Star Treks.
I saw something on After Trek. There was a little tidbit that the guy who made all the, like, the artist effects or whatever for that scene was the same guy who did the Hellraiser stuff. So, there you go.
Hmm.
Interesting. I wonder if he also
I could see that.
I wonder if he also did the little pig thing from Galaxy Quest that turned inside out and then exploded.
And then it exploded. All right, any final thoughts, Eric, on Context is for Kings?
Like the namesake of the episode, I think just because of the nature of this, you know, ongoing storyline, we don't have the bigger picture. And I'm anxious to see more. I'm definitely in it for the long haul. I do like a few of the characters, but I really do hope we get a few lighter moments in the show, for sure.
Yeah, now I can see anyone who's on Twitter who's, like, in the cast, and someone asks them, like, a question that they can't answer. Instead of saying, I just can't answer that, there's, like, a Context is for Kings. And it's just the new, like, I'm not going to tell you line. What do you think, Philip? I know you kind of said this episode kind of cooled your brakes a little bit for the Discovery hype train.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to sound like any of those people on the internet. You know those people. But, you know, it's only the third episode. I mean, let's be honest. So we have 12 to go. So, you know, I'm on board for what's to come. I just, you know, cooled my brakes a little bit about, like, oh.
Yeah, I was kind of similar where, I mean, I watched this once kind of stopping and starting and rewinding certain parts to but I didn't feel like the first two episodes, I was like, okay, I immediately need to watch that all again and just absorb. Like, that was the movie spectacle, which obviously is what it was. This was like, okay, this is an episode. It felt like that. The tone was different. You know, just density-wise, we got way less, but that's okay. But yeah, so it was a little... Okay, it's like, okay, now we're slowing down back into the main narrative. You know, I guess I was just kind of getting used to the speed that the first two episodes were, because they were just booking along and just world-building. So... But yeah, I'm looking forward to The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry. And we'll see if we can come up with an even longer title after that. Daniel, where can people find you online?
They can find me on Twitter. My handle there is @1UpDan. That is the number one, not the word, as in silver shirts are the number one.
And Eric, where can people find you, not just online, but also if they wanted to hear
Star Trek? You can find me online at Trekkieb47, and you can also hear me talk about Star Trek on the Starfleet Escape podcast, where we are also reviewing Discovery, and it's good to be back recording that show, and that is on the Four-Eyed Radio Network.
And Philip, if someone wanted to come up with an even longer title for next week's Discovery episode, where would they find you?
Well, usually I can't tell because my information is above top secret. But because we are in my Chamber of Horrors, or a Chamber of Secrets, really, they can find me on Twitter handle
ncpublicserver.com, where they see my stormtrooping droid building fun, as well as find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi. I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Eric Berry.
I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
Daddy, you're on City Alpha 3.